Hey, welcome to the Boomerang Radio Show. I'm your host, William A. Brown. I see two of my co-hosts there, Mad Mike, well, that's a.k.a. Mad Mike, Mike Ward. How are you, my friend?
Gentlemen, it's a pleasure to be here always with you on Boomerang and to do a wonderful music program with my friend Wild Will on Thursday nights, Coast to Coast.
You know, I tell you, yep, Wild Will, Mad Mike and Wild Will, Coast to Coast. Dr. Demery is right there. Hey, my friend, how are you?
Excellent. Hope you can hear me okay.
Yeah, you're doing fine. You're doing fine. Yeah, I don't know when you had a chance to listen to Mad Mike and Wild Will Coast to Coast on Thursdays, but it is a blast. It's a time to kick off your shoes, you know, grab a glass, you know, of your, maybe your favorite Kool-Aid, whatever that might be. All right. And, just have a great time. And it is 3 hours of fun. You never know, what's going to happen with Mike. Had a great show last Thursday.
Do we need to apologize for last Thursday, by the way?
No. Ain't doing it. Ain't apologizing.
Just checking.
I didn't say apologize. Ain't apologizing. Ain't doing it.
Nope. Okay.
Not doing it. No. Man, matter of fact, nothing to apologize for because we had, the fabulous Mr. Vail Omar on with us. Was that on Thursday? That was on Thursday, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Yes, it was. We had a blast. He had a blast, and it was just so much fun. And then on Friday, we came back, and we celebrated one of our friends that has, and I say our friends because she loves you too, Mike, that had her birthday was this past Saturday, July the 15th, and we kicked the party off early. We like getting started early. We like to be in the front of the line, and that was Kim Rogers, the lovely Kim Rogers. She's listening today as well. Happy birthday again, Kim. And Mike, she sent me, as a matter of fact, I shared the text messages with you. She said she thoroughly enjoyed it. Yep, absolutely, man. It was great, Dr. Demery. As a matter of fact, you may know Kim Rogers. Her mother, is Bobby Johnson, my great friend who passed away last year. Bobby, one of Bobby's daughters, Bobby Johnson, from the choir, and New Hope, her daughter, Kim Rogers, great friend of mine. She's in Longview, Texas, and she listens to everything. And Kim, I love you, girl. Thank you so much for your support. We really do appreciate that. And you know what's fun, Mike, also, on Friday night, we started getting, dedications from other people around the country. And thank you for your contribution. You probably sent me about 7, 8 plus songs or so. And it was, she enjoyed those as well. And we love doing that for you guys. Let us know if you have a birthday coming up. Mike and I will throw a cyber party for you. In case you don't know what a cyber party is, that means that we're here and you're there. Okay. And we're able to make the connection and just play your favorite music for you. So if you're interested in having a cyber party, tell you what, take down this number right now. That's 909-910-0265. Let me repeat, 909-910-0265. The fun thing about that, Mike, and you can jump in here anytime you want now, being a professional DJ yourself and playing just great, great music. Hey, folks, don't let his good looks fool you, okay? He's a real DJ. He's a cowboy, a former investigator. Oh, my God. He's worn so many different hats, but you never would know.
That's how I wore all the hair off my head during too many hats.
He has a great repertoire of music, and I publicly admit I steal some of it too. Sure did. And I'll put it right there in the rotation, Mike. In the rotation. So that's so much
as
fun.
As well you should.
Yes, absolutely, my friend. And so the idea of the Mad Mike and Wild Will Coast to Coast show, Dr. Demery, and to our audience, is that we play practically all genres of music. If I leave a couple of them out, Mike, jump right on in. We'll play anything from classical to blues to jazz to rock and roll to R&B, including Motown and so many of your other favorites. Neo soul, oh, my God. Oh, you know what we haven't played yet? Or maybe we have go-go music. It sort of started, and it did start right there in the Washington D.C. era, right? And one of the most famous, artists, was Chuck Brown. He's no longer with us, right? I don't mean a thing. If you ain't got that go-go swing. And so that's Chuck Brown. It's just good stuff, man. Mike, what did I leave out?
Well, you did. I don't think you left anything out. But the one thing that we do, and we do it on purpose, too, by the way. William does a great job of producing that show and doing the rotation for whatever we're going to play that night. I send him my list. He has his list. And he dovetails everything together any way he wants, and it works out beautiful. But the cool thing about that show, and I want you, all of you that are listening, think about what you listen to on the radio or over the internet, podcasts, whatever. You can listen to our music program, and you'll hear Count Basie followed up by Willie Nelson. Where else can you go for that? Followed up by the Temptations. Yeah. You can't go anywhere else and get that kind of variety of music. So if you like a really wide, you may not like everything we play, but you're probably going to like most of it, and you're going to go, man, I haven't heard that in 20, 30, 40 years. Or that's a new song that just came out from Taylor Swift. I love that song. That's what you're going to hear on Coast to Coast. You're going to hear, I guess they call it a mashup, where you just mash everything together like you're smashing potatoes. And you know what? In the end run, it tastes good.
That's right. Mix it all up. Yeah, Mike's exactly right. You know, the thing about it is, I've exposed Mike to some songs he hadn't heard before, and he certainly has exposed me to songs that I've never heard before, Dr. Demery. And man, we'll play some country songs. I said, whoa, I like that. I said, and Mike already knows, if I say I like it, if I really, really like, he knows I'm throwing it into the rotation, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. And ladies and gentlemen, that's Mad Mike. And then Dr. Demery, give you a little background on Dr. Demery. Dr. Demery, I started the Boomerang Show, oh, good Lord, going on 9 years, and I needed a co-host. And Dr. Demery, has it been 7 years, 8 years that you've been with me? 7 years at least.
Yeah, I think it's closer to eight.
Yeah, closer to eight. And it was just Dr. Demery and I, and we would get on and do the same things that we're doing now, Mike. We'd talk about topical issues that we think affect us in our everyday lives, and we just talk about it, and we talk openly like we do now, you know, and we just give our opinions, and we do our research on it. And then Dr. Demery, he's such a well-read man and been around the world a couple of times, more times than I have, in several different countries around the world, speaks five languages, and I just thought that he'd be the perfect co-host. And he's loyal, dedicated, and he's with me every Sunday, and has been with me every Sunday since. So the Boomerang, the only changes with the Boomerang Show is that we've added more co-hosts. The panel has expanded quite a bit. And then the next one was Ann, okay, then so forth. And then we had Dr. Demery, Dr. Sims, Dr. Sims before that, Dr. Harris, Brother Tisdale, he came on later. I don't know who came on first, Dr. Danny Tisdale or Mike, one of you two guys. But I am so proud of this panel. And people comment on it, says, you know what? I love listening to this show because you guys are open, you're honest, you do your research. And you don't agree with everything the other panelists say, and nor should we. If I don't agree with Dr. Demery, I'm going to say so. If I don't agree with Mike, I'll say so. And if you guys don't agree with me, say so, and they do. And I love that about that. Open discussions, folks. And I think that the world would be a lot better if we did that.
If nothing else on Boomerang, what we talk about, and again, whether we agree with each other or not, doesn't matter. It gives you perspective. It gives you perspective because William grew up different than I grew up, than what Dr. Demery grew up with. We all grew up with different circumstances, different environment, different parents, different friends, different society norms, wherever you happen to grow up. I mean, I grew up in California down in Ventura County, and I know William grew up in Virginia. So all those things mold us into what we are, and it gives us perspective that maybe is different than other people. And when we openly accept the perspective of other people and go, man, I never thought about that before.
Right.
Oh, my God. I didn't grow up that way, but, oh, that's relevant. That's what Boomerang's about.
That's what it's all about. One thing that I think the three of us have in common, I'm sure Dr. Demery would agree with this, and that is our parents parented. They didn't play. They didn't take any junk. okay? They just, look, this is the way it is. And I don't know about the two. No, I do know about the two of you. You didn't talk back either.
Oh, well, you did. You did once. It's like jumping out of an airplane without a parachute. You can do it once. You ain't going to do it again.
You're not going to do it. Absolutely. And funny story. Dr. Demery's mom, I knew her personally. And she was the sweetest little lady, you know. But don't cross her. Good Lord. Mike, hey, Dr. Demery, she only weighed, what, 110 maybe? A 110 maybe?
Soaking wet. Soaking wet.
And she gave birth to this guy?
Yeah.
Holy moly.
Hey, you know what? And I guarantee, I don't care how big he is, I bet you he didn't talk back, Mike. No, no. Right? Right, Dr. Demery?
Amen.
I'm going to tell you, Dr. Demery told me a little story about... Dr. Timber, I hope it's okay for me to tell the story.
And go ahead.
And your mom was in church. And one of the trustees, who nobody really gets along with, okay, want to give your mom some lip about a ministry that she was in charge of, right? And the trustee tried to give her a hard time. And Mike, the trustee, she was bigger than Dr. Demery's mama, didn't make any difference. Quite a bit bigger. And Dr. Demery had to get in between the two.
You know, it's pretty bad when you you pick your mom under her armpits and lift her and walk away with her.
You know what? And so he got her outside. And she said, oh, wait a minute, hold it. I don't know what she called Dr. Demery at that time, right? What did she call him, Rudolph or whatever she called him, right? And so she said, did she call you Butch?
Right.
She called him Butch. Well, Butch, I forgot something inside. I need to go back inside. He said, no, Mom, no. hey, Mike, it'll have been clean up aisle 7. I'm telling you.
And 8. It'd have been over 2 aisles.
Great show. Now, I had a speaking engagement earlier today, and she texted me back about an hour ago. And so she says, William, apologize to the panel for me. She says she is exhausted. And I can certainly understand that. If you guys have ever done speaking engagements before, you may think that running a marathon or just running or exercising can tire you out. Get up and try to talk to someone for 2 hours. I'm telling you, it will, Dr. Demery, you can attest to that. You do that every week, right? In the pulpit, folks, it is exhausting. Mike, you've done public speaking, I know.
That's how I got into all of this stuff with the department, but I find a different, almost 180 degree difference in it, because I will do a 2 hour talk, for refuse to be a victim, the class I created. I'll do a 2 hour talk for that, and I feel, elated afterwards. I feel excited. I don't know if it's the adrenaline or what, but I feel really good after I do a talk, especially if I know I nailed it.
Right. Yeah.
So I have kind of a different perspective on it.
Well, you know, it
excites me because I know that I've taken something that was given to me through years of experience and other really good mentors that lit my candle, so to speak, and gave me knowledge and wisdom and ability. And I learned to be able to pass that on and light other candles again, so to speak. And I find that really exhilarating that I think it's the same thing that teachers get from being able to take and mold our youth in a good way and give them information and make them whole that they can think from themselves and give them knowledge and ability to make their lives better. And I think that's what our teachers feel every day. And I think that's why teachers, they do what they do for not very good pay. Our teachers are not paid very well, but they get what I call payment of heart and head. Yeah. They know that they helped other people be better and enjoy their lives better. And I think that's what teachers get. And when I do those classes or whatever talk I'm speaking on, I feel elated. I mean, I really do. I'm on top of the world sometimes after some of these talks.
Well, you know, I feel part of that. I, the part about being elated and excited, especially if you nailed it and you know that. And how do you know that you nailed? That's when you have connected with your audience. When you have connected with that audience and you can feel the vibe, whether they're into you or not. Now, if you're up there and they're yawning, then no, you didn't nail it. but if they're excited and they're asking questions and they're up in their seat.
That's it. And that's how I know I'm nailing it. I'm supposed to do, let's say, an hour talk or 2 hour talk.
Right.
And they won't let me go.
Yeah.
I did a disaster communication talk for a group out here in Banning, that I've spoke in front of many times. And I was supposed to do like 30 minutes on disaster communications.
Uh-huh.
And about an hour and a half later, they still wouldn't let me go.
Yeah. That is really, really good. That happened to me. And I'm going to go to Dr. Dimmer here. I remember I was at a major, major firm and, I got a call one day. Somebody I didn't know. It was a young lady and she said, "Mr. Brown, you don't know me, but I am in charge of this women's conference that happens in Loma Linda each and every year." And we had a financial advisor, a lady financial advisor that was supposed to speak, but she got sick. And we were just wondering if you could fill in, say maybe an hour and a half, maybe two, come at 10 and you can leave, by noon or whatever it is. Well, it took me about 2 seconds and I said, "Yep, I'll do it." And so I did it and I went down. I was there on time at 10. And by the time at noon, I looked at my watch and that was useless because they wouldn't let me go until 2 o'clock. Four hours. And Mike, I'm going to tell you, like I said, I'm elated when I give a good talk, but I'm telling you, it takes something out of me. 4 hours. I was driving up Redlands Boulevard and I had to pull over to the right. I think I pulled into, oh my God, what is that? Restaurant, right there on Redlands Boulevard. I'm trying to think of it. I can't think of the name.
Applebee's?
No. Oh my God. It'll come to me. I can see the place right now where you go in there and they got this buffet with all this food and I forgot the name of it. But anyway.
Oh, hometown buffet?
Hometown buffet. I pulled in their parking lot and I just had to relax for a couple of minutes. I was exhausted. Dr. Dimmer, what type of experience to you? After you've been speaking for a while, are you exhausted? Are you excited? Or you're tired, hungry, want to get out of there? What's your experience? What has your experience been?
Well, I can only say that from the perspective where you guys are coming from, preaching is a little different because you are pouring out of yourself, and it's like you're giving some of your spirit to the congregation, because what you're doing is you attempt to give a suitable verbal offering to God first and then to God's people. And you're not necessarily talking about your opinion. A lot of time you piss people off. And you know that, William. I piss people off a lot of times. That's okay, because that's what got Jesus killed, because he told the truth and he told it like it was, And so preaching is a little different. But when you've been preaching as long as I have, for like 40 years now, you learn how to, there's a Greek word called the denouement. And what that means is you learn how to gate yourself and you learn how to, it's like a horse racer. A jockey knows how to gate the horse and they know when the home stretch is coming and they know when to pour it on towards the end. Mm-hmm. They know when to lay back a little bit and allow the horse to get into his or her stride. But when the home stretch comes, you know when to just let it all hang out. and so that's kind of what preaching is that you are speaking to people's heartstrings. Mm. You're speaking to get people to change the way their perspective is on things. And my role is not to really get people to change their view, but to give them another perspective about things. Like today, my text was Matthew chapter 13, verses 1-9, which talks about the sower, planting the seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to explain to people, because a lot of them didn't quite get it, is the sower is God. And the seed is the word of God. And the soil that the seed lands on is us. So we have to make sure that our soil is in good place. So a lot of times you're a historian, you're talking about the history of the text. A lot of times you're a prophet because you have to prophesy, which I've done on this show. I don't consider myself a prophet, but you know, William, I've prophesied a couple of times on this show, and at least two of the ones that I can think of have come true. I prophesied about this show. I prophesied about Ann's ministry, and they've come to fruition. Not so much that I'm trying to pat myself on the back, but a lot of times when you're preaching, you don't necessarily have to be a prophet, but you have to be in the spirit of prophecy. And William will attest to this. How do you tell whether or not a prophet is true or not? By what they say comes true. You know, there's a lot of false prophets out there.
Oh, boy. So
you would hope that some of the things that you were talking about, when you not necessarily predict the future, but that's part of what it is that you, you know, kind of tell people what's going to be happening in the future based on what the text is that you're preaching about, because that's what's different. You're talking about things that happened 2,000-3,000 years ago, and if you're speaking out of the Old Testament, it's longer than that, 5,000 years ago, 6,000 years ago, if you're preaching out of Genesis. So, you know, and you're speaking eschatology, which means from the past to the present and into the future. So it's similar to what you guys are doing, but there's some major differences. Trust me on that. There's some major differences, because I think any preacher or speaker to extent, like you guys are talking, William, but you, Mike, is that you're trying to stimulate the audience and give them different perspectives on things, not necessarily change their mind, but to give them, you know, a different way possibly of looking at things. So I talk too much. I'm sorry.
No, you haven't. No, this is a talk show, Dr. Dimmer. You know this by now. It's a talk show. So we really appreciate it, you know? And I know you have no problems talking. I also noticed something about you. You talk when you have something to say. It's not just a bunch of word salad that you're throwing out there and hope people ingest or digest it. And you just, when you start talking about false prophets, that leads, you help me to segue right into our, this video clip I'm going to play. I sent you guys a copy of this. I hope you guys saw it. But to our audience, like Dr. Dimmer say, you know, I've noticed something over the last several years. You remember, folks, you can go back as early as 10, 15, 20 years ago, and you walk into most churches, and barely find a seat. Now you can walk into a church in most cases and find a seat anywhere. Why is that? Well, I'm going to blame that on some of these charlatans out here. I'm going to bring it on some of these so-called preachers. And when they are exposed, you know, people just simply have had enough. So we're going to start off with this, and then we're going to come back and comment on it, right? And how does this tie into artificial intelligence? Kick back, folks.
And how does it tie into our politicians as well as being
misled? Oh, boy. I'm so glad you said that. Let's do this. Let me see if I can get this to work. I think
when I saw that picture pop up, Dr. Demery was talking about something serious, and I laughed out loud. I'm sorry, Dr. Demery, but when William popped this picture, this video up, I had to laugh. I'm sorry.
Okay. Let's see if we can make this work.
I don't have a category for this next one, so I'm just going to say, here it is.
Where you going, Joe?
Get me off this camera.
You ain't paid me my money.
Get me off this
you ain't paid me my money. I'll get you off this camera when you give me my money. 15 minutes, 125. You know the drill. How many times a week we meet up, Joe? This time, really, you think you're gonna... No, I'm sorry. Your wife's gonna see this. Your wife is gonna see this. Pay me my money or get a divorce. Which one is gonna be?
Get me off this camera.
Which one is it gonna be?
Get me off this camera.
She's gonna know.
Get me off this camera.
3-4 times a week he here, y'all. Facebook. He's here meeting with me in this room. Yeah.
That man's a fool.
No, I'm not getting you off for nothing. Everybody gonna know about you. Run me my money. I ain't got time for this. You know my money is valuable. I'm sorry. You know my time is my money. And I I'll explain my time with you.
I gave you $200 last time.
And you got $200 worth of pleasure the last time, too.
Let me pay you when I get home.
No, no. You ain't gave me nothing extra. You got extras. I'm sorry. No. Absolutely not.
Okay.
This ain't happening. You're not leaving, Joe.
Give me off that damn camera.
No.
Give me
when you give me my money, I'll get you off the camera. You're getting a divorce. What you're going to get is a divorce.
Give me off that camera.
Everybody on Facebook is going to see this. Yes, his name is Joe. She'll know who you are. Everybody might not know, but she will know. She will know. You know, when you give me my money, that's all you got to do is give me my money. Give me my money. That's all you have to do. I'm sorry. 15 minutes for 15. 15 minutes. 125. 125. You know the rates. You know the rates.
I'll pay your to be free tonight.
What? You have lost your damn mind. You ain't never paid me for nothing free. Whatever you paid me, you got your money's worth every time. You've been satisfied. Do you hear me? You're not leaving this room. You're not leaving this room until I get my money. I'm sorry. No, you white. No, I'm joking. You're not leaving. Not joke. No, you're about to catch charge, y'all. No, you're not leaving. I'm sorry. No, I don't. What? Yes, Joe, right here, has not paid me my money. I'm sorry. You about to get a divorce, Joe. I'm posting this. You think I'm playing with you? You think I'm playing with you?
Reverend, I'm highly disappointed, sir. You of all people should know the importance of paying tithes and offerings. Okay, let's put up the picture full mask. He actually did a good job hiding himself. Now, we didn't, blur the picture. The picture was already blurred. Pastor Joe said some things that I just, I want to highlight. One, he said it should be free because I guess he left a tip maybe for the last encounter. He said, I gave you $200 last time. And that was rebutted by the fact that he received $200 worth of pleasure. And then the rates, 15 minutes. Now, I'm just saying what she said the rates are. 15 minutes equals $125. So, Reverend, that's a whole lot of collection money, dear brother, that you have been paying. And the church may need to check the finances, sir. Why didn't you just pay the woman? I'm not moralizing against you, man. You do what you do. I hope your wife is at least aware of your shenanigans. That's only fair. But damn, you said it should be free. Come on, man.
Oh, my God.
You can probably run that pip church game on other folks, but she was the wrong one. All right. Ben, thoughts here.
This is a great video. I mean, putting him on blast and the guy sticking by, not paying even at the end.
Oh, man.
He pulls out one pocket and says, I don't have any money. A lot of pants, FYI, have two pockets.
That's
so you got to pull up. You got to pull out, just facts. I speak the truth. You got to pull out two pockets to prove you don't have the money on you at the moment. But then he doesn't even stick by and say, I'll pay you later. Even at the very end, he's like, come on, this one should be free. You don't get free services from a prostitute. This is a business transaction. This ain't love. This is not a voluntary hangout. This is a work meeting. This is a work meeting, and I'm sorry she didn't get the 125, but, and I don't know how far she lives from LA, but let me just say, here's 100, here's 20, and here's 5. That's a 125 right there. The money's good. You can put the little marker on it. Come on over anytime.
Oh, God, let me stop this. Hey, look here. I've got something for Pastor Joe right now. All right, I will play this little clip right here. I mean, this song right here. Joe, this one. Oh.
Police man is on a criminal season. What is he doing in here? Man is on a premises, y'all, now. What is he doing in here? The police man is on a premises, y'all. What is he doing in here? The police man on these premises. What in the hell is he doing in here? Moving your head against
Run, Joe! Oh, man. Yeah, I think Joe's going to have to run. Joe didn't only run out of that hotel room. He might have to run when he get home and the wife has found out. So, as sad as that is, it was kind of funny, right? But we're here. Look, I will tell you something. If you're a preacher up in that pulpit and you're playing around with your congregation, you get what you get. You get what you get. And I'm going to start off with Dr. Denver, then I'm going to go to Mike. I sent both of you guys that clip. I don't know whether it was today, yesterday, or whenever I saw it. But
yesterday.
Oh, my goodness. Boy, I'm telling you. It's sort of bittersweet, Dr. Denver, because I'm sure that being a preacher yourself and as serious as you take it, you, as much as anybody, and I know you personally, you don't want those clowns up in the pulpit. But what they're doing is they are pretending to be one thing and they are milking the congregation out of their money and they don't believe any more than they're trying to get you to believe. I need your comment, Dr. Demery.
Well, I think when you hit the nail on the head when you were commenting a little earlier, and you were exactly right, church attendance in the United States is the lowest it's been in probably 150 to 200 years. And the reason why is because you have a lot of these, I just call them knuckleheads and buffoons, you know, in the pulpit. Many of them have not been trained. They have not gone through any proper, education. And I mean, you know, I think just like it's a profession preaching, but it's also, knowing how to receive, information from the Spirit that guides you and leads you and allows you to be moved to say some of the things that you say. And so I think it is a shame and a mockery that a lot of these morons, you know, get in the pulpit. And that's why people stop going to church, because, you know, they get this idiot that gets in the pulpit, doesn't know what they're talking about, doesn't know what they're saying or talking about, and it affects, and it's a downward spiral, and it trickles down to the people that say, wait a minute, pastor don't know what he's talking about, you know. And before me, the pastor that was in this church that I'm in before me, I think was one of the people that even told me that the pastor came to church drunk and was stumbling out of the pulpit stone drunk. Now, what kind of person does that who's attempting to be a leader of a flock of people? I mean, that's just, it's just asinine. You know, it's crazy. And so, you know, you were right, William. The reason why a lot of people aren't coming to church, because you got these, you know, morons up in the pulpit, these nincompoops, and they don't know what the heck they're doing. They're just up there for a paycheck to get a quick money, don't have to worry about taxes and all this other kind of stuff. And they make a shame and a mockery, and they're an embarrassment. So, you know, I say, just like in any profession, Mike was trained as an investigator. You would hope that along some level he has had some training and some experience. You, William, in the financial industry, when people come to you to invest their money, they want to be able to say, well, I know William has some experience. He has some training. He's certified. He's licensed, you know, to do what he's doing. So I think the same thing with preachers, they should fall into the same scrutiny, but they do not.
Yeah.
Because denominations and churches do not hold their pastors accountable for their training and their experience and their actions. So hopefully enough said.
Yeah, exactly. Mike, I'm taking from Dr. Demery, you're exactly right about the training, because like in law enforcement, you've got to be trained. And I'm guessing you can tell us how this works. But in my field, I have to do what they call continuing education, meaning I can't go by what I learned 25 years ago and just go on that, because information is being updated. sometimes annually, and sometimes more often than that. But not only that, you need to be reminded, said, okay, this is how that works. Because if, say, for instance, you went into the academy 25, 30, 35 years ago, some things that you may have forgotten, and you need to be refreshed on it. And there are updated laws, updated things that we have to do. Now, each year, I have to take some. I'm taking something, whether it's an ethics update or a money laundering class. Now, the money laundering and ethics, I say every 2 years or so. But the way they fall, I'm taking one or the other every year. And it keeps me sharp on the laws and the do's and the don'ts and things like that. And ethics is a big, big thing that we constantly have to stay up on, as well as money laundering. That's a huge thing, folks. That's a big deal. What better way to launder money than to through cash, life insurance, or annuity products, or stocks, or things like that? Because once it goes in, okay, that money, and it's invested, that money is washed, because they can pull out clean cash, even though it went in dirty. So there are guidelines on who, what, where, when, and how, and why. Somebody comes to you with a large sum of money, and they start asking you questions. So, how soon can I get this out? So, hold it. How soon can you get it out? Okay. So that's a red flag there. And sometimes we do checks and balances. If there's an unusual transaction, my duty is to flag that, and then I'm going to a supervisor. Said, okay, what do you think about this? Okay, what do you think about this? Okay. Because guess what? If I screw up really badly, Mike, it could be prison time, up to $1 million in fine, and lose my license for 10 years. I mean, it is harsh. It is harsh. So, Mike, I want your take on the video we just watched and how you relate to that. And how does this tie in to artificial intelligence?
Oh, wow, there's so much to unpack there. First of all, William, I have investments with you, so I want to know, how soon can I get my money out?
No. No. Well, actually, you've had it so long now, you can, see. But if you would come to me 1 or 2 months after you invested it, hey, William, you know, okay, no. Then the flag will go up. Now, that doesn't mean you can't get it, but, you know, actually, the thing about it is that I'm going to do my investigation before it got to 1 or 2 months. Matter of fact, when you put it in and you immediately start asking me money, then it's supposed to be a long-term investment, and you want to know if you can get the money out in a week or so, that's a huge, huge red flag. Okay? I need to know where that money came from, and I'm going to find out where that money came from. Tell you a quick story. I was going to toss it over to you. I had this so-called doctor. I don't know. Never met this guy. He called me up. And he told me that he had $1 million that I came highly recommended, and he wanted to invest with me, right? And the thing about it, it sounded a little strange. He was talking really, really fast. And he says, well, this is what you're going to do for me. I said, well, hold on. What you are going to do for me? You're going to. Okay, see, that kind of struck a nerve right there. You're going to invest my money, and we're going to do some day trading, you know, and I'm going to be able to cash in whenever I get ready. And I says, doctor, with all due respect, no, I'm not going to do anything for you. I said, matter of fact, I don't do day trading. He said, you're not going to day trade for me? I said, look, I wouldn't day trade for my mama. Okay, so no, sir. And he got really, really upset and hung up. But see, that was, it just smelled wrong. It didn't smell right. So, Mike, I want you to comment. Unpack anything you want. I need to grab a pad anyway.
There's a lot here, man.
Start wherever you want, okay?
Okay. So I'm going to add on to what Dr. Demery said. The reason why people aren't going to church anymore is because our society has been in decline of morals for a long time. when we started taking prayer out of the schools, when we started taking the Pledge of Allegiance out of the schools, and I'm going to blame this on activists and politicians. Excuse, I got a fly here that's trying to kill me. Get out of here. I'm busy. So when we started a moral decline, especially with our children in our schools, I think that was, for me, the first time that I recognized something that was not right. So that, I think, is part of the reasons why people don't go to church anymore, because it's not popular to go to church anymore. In fact, it's unpopular to go to church anymore because you're actually labeled as some kind of radical, that you have morals. That, to me, is just unfathomable. Second, when you have positions of, when you have people in positions of power, whether they be ministers, judges, law enforcement, doctors, all of these people should be and need to be held to a higher standard, that they're irreputable in what they do, that you can trust these people. And I, in my personal experience with doctors, I've had some horrific experiences with doctors that I don't think were good doctors at all. I think they were just in it to, as a cattle call, to push you through and, you know, give you drugs, give you time off, give you dope. They didn't have a real way to fix you or help you that long term. It was always short term. Here, you know, pay us and, here's some pills. Take some pills. Pharmaceutical industry is part of that. Also huge industry. Follow the money. William always says this, follow the money. So let me see. We talked about a decline in morals. We talked about people being held to a higher standard. Judges and people, this higher standard, they should be held to a level where even the appearance, let me say it again, even the appearance of impropriety is not acceptable. So even if you can prove, well, I didn't do anything wrong as a judge, or you did as a law enforcement officer, or as somebody that ministers people or cares for them mentally and spiritually, even the appearance is wrong. So you always have to hold yourself to that higher standard, because society will hold you to that higher standard as well. So let me see. We got the decline of people going to church. We got the decline of morality in our society. And I think a lot of this, again, is pushed by radical people with their own agenda and our politicians. And all of you have heard me say this many times. I don't like politicians. I don't care which side you're on. I think the number one objective for a politician is to get reelected or step up to a higher office. That is their number one reason for being a politician. And I would say that maybe some of these preachers, ministers, pastors, sometimes maybe that's their motivation too, is how can I get a congregation bigger and draw more money? Again, follow the money. AI. I'm not sure I can equate what we're talking about to AI specifically, other than AI can create videos and pictures that are not true and accurate, and people will buy into them. You'll see fake, what they call, deep fakes, videos and maybe just audio recordings of people saying stuff they never did or said. And it goes out there over the internet, goes out there over social media, and people, instead of opening their eyes and looking at, gosh, that doesn't sound right. Did Biden say that? Did Trump say that? Did whomever, you know, you'll pick your person. Did Hillary say that? And these fakes are being created to manipulate the masses. And I had a very good meat cutter friend of mine I met when I was cutting meat for Alpha Beta years ago. Dwight Hunt is his name, very wise man. And he used to say the masses are the asses. That's because they won't take the time to do their own research. They won't take the time to put in some critical thinking skills to go, you know what, that just doesn't sound right. That's kind of a red flag for me. A person would never say that. Look it up. Find out for yourself. Because there's so much fake information out there. And the media buys into it all the time. You know, I think the media is very corrupt. Again, I don't care which side you come from. They all have their own agenda. So I hope I've covered everything, William. Dr. Tammy, you can jump in too, please.
Well, I think you're right on target. And I mean, it's one of the things I do. There's a book in the Bible called Malachi, which most people are familiar with. And towards the end of the book of Malachi, it talks about try me and test me and know me. And I tell my people every Sunday, go look it up yourself. Don't give my word the last word on what I'm telling you. Go do some research for yourself. There's so much stuff out there now that you can do the research. I have several different Bible programs that I use, and I'm saying you don't have to have those as sophisticated as the ones I have, but you can just basically look up certain things on the internet, and it'll give you some information that you need to know that what I'm telling you is at least on track, or at least, in the line of thought that I'm trying to give you. So, I mean, I tell my people, and here's one of, there's several ways that preachers get into trouble. But one of the ways is this, and most of you would agree with me, particularly our listeners, is money. Pastors get in trouble with farting around with money more than anything else in the world. That's why my congregation, I don't want to see the money. I don't want to hear about the money. And so I don't even want to touch the money. I have treasurers, I have secretaries that handle the money in the church, and they're held accountable. Before anybody in my church can write a check, there has to be at least two signatures, and mine ain't on it because I don't need to be in money transaction. And that's one of the ways ministers get into trouble. They start farting around with the money in the church, and like Mike said, and I'm quoting one of my famous theologians, Reinhold Niebuhr, he said, absolute power corrupts, correction, it was Paul Tillich. Paul Tillich said, absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Absolutely.
And when you start farting around with power and influence and positions therein, you're going to get yourself into trouble. And one of the problems is, a second thing that ministers get themselves involved in that gets them into trouble is they're not humble. They're not willing to step down off their high horses and be humble to people. We do a foot washing at my church every year. Why? Because that's what Jesus did. Now, here I am, some big-time minister washing people's dirty, funky feet. I have no problems doing that because I'm humble in the process of doing it. And if a minister cannot be humble, then they need to get out of the business and go do something else. They need to go sell insurance or be a used car salesman or something because they're in the wrong business. You have to be humble, and you have to be one who tells the truth and be honest. And like Mike was saying, being a person of integrity, being a person of honor, and that should mean everything to you. And a lot of these people are not doing that. And second, the third area they get in trouble in, there's many areas that get in trouble, but these are the big areas. And William's back, he can attest to this. And Mike, you probably have seen this as well in your years of research and just living. The other problem that ministers get themselves in is skirts.
Oh, boy.
When you start farting around with skirts, you're going to get yourself in trouble. Real quick story, and then I'll end. When I am at my church and I'm counseling somebody, William's heard me tell a story before. My secretary cannot leave. They cannot leave. I don't care how late it is. I'll give you overtime pay or something. But particularly if I'm counseling a woman, my door is cracked. And the way my office is set up, she can always see my face. Now, if she can't see my face through the cracked door, and I respect the person's privacy who I'm counseling, then she has permission by me to come in. She won't even have to knock, to just open the door and say, Pastor, is everything okay? Because I'm not getting into no trouble with no skirt. That's what will get you into trouble quicker than anything. Quicker than anything. And a pastor who's married, if he gets a call in the middle of the night from another woman, he better be taking his wife with him or take somebody, because sometimes people will set you up You may be honest and pure and have good integrity, but people will set you up to get you to fall. Another quick story, and I'll be done. William heard this story before, so William, bear with me. When I was on active duty, I was a Navy chaplain, and I got a call in the middle of the night from the Commodore's wife. From the Commodore's wife, I got a call. And she said, "Oh, chaplain, you have to come over. You have to come as an emergency." I said, "Well, what is it? Why can't you tell me?" No, you just have to come. You have to come. So I got myself together. I called my assistant, and he was at the club. I went and got him. We went to the motor pool, got the car, and drove down to her house. He was with me. I had a witness. We got to the house, walking up to the door. He stopped and stumbled, and I bumped into him because I was walking behind him, made sure we had the right address. She opened the door. She was butt naked. Butt naked. This is a true story. She was butt naked. All she had on was a smile. And my RP, who was called Religious Program Specialist, which is a chaplain, he was so shocked, he didn't know what to do. We got back in the car and drove back to the base.
Man, wow. Yep, I've heard. That's right. I've got one response to that. Hold on 1 second. Got one done to sign my bail. Someone's going to see that this is right out of jail.
See, even Mike Pence, the Vice President of the United States, he admitted that he would not be in a room alone with another female. He wouldn't do it because of the appearance of impropriety. Even though he didn't do anything wrong, it was the appearance of impropriety.
You're exactly right. And Dr. Dimmer, you're so right about that too. Be careful. If you are, you could have the best intentions, and there are some people out here that will set you up. They will set you up. And if you had gone by yourself.
Oh, Lord, I'd be in Leavenworth right now just from a word.
See?
I'd be sitting in Leavenworth right now.
See? Your whole life is ruined. And that tells you, Mike, we talk about this all the time. Good and evil. You have, and unfortunately in society here, we do have some evil persons. So you have to ask yourself the question, what her motivation, okay? Why would she do that, okay? It could have been that she was loose that way, or she could have been setting you up, Dr. Dimmer. It could happen. It does happen. It has happened. You have men in prison right now. Some belong there and some don't because they were set up. Right, Mike?
Yes, absolutely true.
They were just set up. And see, Mike, you asked the question earlier. We were talking about the story about Pastor Joe and how does that relate to AI? Not necessarily because it was fictionalized as far as the divorce was concerned or the video was manipulated, anything like that. But we all know that AI has to do with the transmission now of where you take the internet, for instance, even though the information might be true, how is it transmitted? Okay, man, you know, it's a program that's transmitting that information. What the program we're on right now, it's transmitting the information. I can't transmit it by myself. There's no way I can do that. Okay, so these are things that it's not necessarily manipulated, and even so, having said that, AI has proven to us right now that things can be manipulated. They can take your voice. They can take Mike's voice. They can take my voice and Dr. Demery's voice. And all they need is just a few minutes of your voice, and they can put any story behind it. They can put anything, or they can make it sound like you, even though you had
created an entire dialogue.
That's exactly
just audio.
Right.
And if they have your facial, if they have pictures of you in different positions, like when I move my face, if they've got a couple of different views of your face, they can take that audio and they can put it to your face and manipulate your mouth so it looks like you're actually saying those words.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm talking about AI, I'm not talking about just the use of technology.
Uh-huh.
I mean, because everything we're doing right here, you want to do. We're sending it out as a pipeline of information. So when I see AI these days, I'm not thinking about just basic technology. I mean, we had telephones back in the day. I guess that was AI because it was a landline that you could talk to people over, mm-hmm. over the telephone lines. Or we had television I guess that was the beginning of AI in such a, maybe not, I'm not sure. But when we're talking about AI these days, we're talking about the manipulative evil, good and evil, the evil side of AI and how, AI is used for nefarious, evil purposes and how AI also is a danger to society because at what point does AI go, we're a little smarter than humans. We can think faster. We can act faster. We can do everything better. We should just take over the humans. That's the really scary side of AI that I know that you're worried about, William.
Yeah. You know, the thing I've seen, professionals who are adept in AI and they come on and talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly. And they would talk about, we have to be careful not to let artificial intelligence get out of control. Because the way it's going right now, if there are no safeguards put on it, it can really cause destruction in society. Can you imagine? Can you imagine that somebody create a program? I hate to even say this because I'm sure somebody already has the idea, but I'm going to go on and say it, that they could even start a war through artificial intelligence. They can blackmail you through artificial intelligence. As a matter of fact, it's being done right now. There were a story that I read several months ago about two grandparents that were about to get swindled by someone who says, I've got your grandson here. Okay. Or your grandson is in jail. And if you don't pay this bond right now, okay, then, we're going to keep him and it's not going to be good for you. Right.
And you'll never see him again.
And this was an elderly couple that they pulled this on. Right. And, and the thing about it is they did the smart thing. They didn't fall for it, right? And then there was a parody that I saw somewhere on Facebook, and it was somebody calling up the same type of scenario. We've got your grandson. Got your grandson here, okay? And he's going to prison if we don't get this money right away. And the couple, they were smart enough to know, this is a parody, right, that, hey, my grandson's only 2 years old. He's only 2 years old. So they knew right away it was a scam. And I've even had, on a serious note, though, I had a client who was duped out of $7,000 because someone pretended to be the IRS. $7,000. She called me up, and she was hysterical. And she says, William, oh, my God. And I don't think she even told her husband because she was so embarrassed and ashamed,
yeah,
that she got duped this way, and she was just out of control. And I talked to her, and calmed her down just a little bit, and we went over some ideas that perhaps she could find a way to get her money back. I don't think she ever did, but you have nefarious creatures out here instead of getting a real job or using those skills to create their own vocation, whatever it is. They do it for evil. Folks, you really have to be careful about this. Something, Mike, and you pointed on something earlier about TV. You talk about the telephones and things of that nature. And you're on to something because I think it was last week or week before last, I was just sitting, I was thinking, I always think about ideas for this program. When we get on this program, we just don't get on just, let's talk about this, let's talk about that. I have an idea what we're going to talk about. Now, sometimes it goes way left or way right or way whatever, and we get
That's okay. We get on a
conversation, and we never cover entirely the the meaning or the topic. But that's okay, because apparently if, when we start this and it takes us in a different direction, that's good too, because that means that people are thinking, and then there may be, it's something that we need to really drill down on, you see. To tell you what I did, I was sitting, I was thinking, and I said, I wonder, how does AI thing start? And for, I don't know how it came to me, Dr. Dimon, I don't know how it came to me, Mike. I said, is there any relation or any connection between the Egyptian pyramids? Now we know we're going way. Okay. Back to AI. And you know that, fair and gentlemen? It says the Egyptians didn't come up with AI, but they set the groundwork through hieroglyphics, pictures, and that was their way of communicating without the verbal, without us, you know, doing it verbally, so to speak. And that stuck with me, how the pyramids set the tone for artificial intelligence. And I found that interesting, and I'm going to have Mr. Earl Mitchell on, because, you know, when we start talking about Egypt and the pyramids and the influence that the Egyptians have right now, even in this country, I think we need to have Mr. Earl Mitchell on. I want to explore that. But I found it fascinating. Moving right along, if you notice right now, folks, the actors and writers right now in Hollywood, they're on strike. They're on strike. And the industry says, well, we gave them what we thought was a reasonable offer. And they try to seem like the offer that they gave was more than reasonable. But apparently, the writers and the actors didn't agree with that. And one thing that they are really concerned about is that how AI. The industry is using AI in their industry. Okay, Dr. Demery. To really take away from their own creativity, therefore
replace them.
Wow! I want you to. And let's talk about this, because all of us, the three of us, and I believe this, we like a good movie. We do like a good, and we can appreciate really, really good actors. And I want to hear your take on that, because it is. A strike that's going on right now that that has to end somewhere. And so whether the industry is going to be stubborn enough to say, nope, they have to bring the actors back. I mean, I'm thinking they do. And is there a compromise? Cause if I'm an actor, or I'm a writer, I really don't want my material or my information or my ideas stolen, and you using technology instead of me, which is going to cut down on my way of making a living. I'm going to start with you, Dr. Dimery.
Well, you know, I think that they have a legitimate issue. And like Mike has said in the past, it's all about the money, you know, and where does the money go back to? And it's all about greed and who can get the most money. And I think the second element is they're taking the human element out of the process.
Mm.
When you begin to take the human element, like the writers and the, you know, Screen Actors Guild, all the people along, because if you've ever been to a movie production before, and when I used to work in the entertainment industry, I've worked on a lot of them. There's a whole lot of moving parts that you don't see on the TV screen that have to take place in order for a movie production to take place. Many moving parts. You've got the grip, you've got the lighting, you've got the makeup people, and you've got the people that make the food for the people that are there to eat. Many moving parts, and I left some parts out. Those people have to be paid what the industry standard is. And a lot of these people don't want to do that. But I think it's a shame, that, you know, they should be getting paid what they're supposed to get paid. Some of the people are greedy and they want to make more money. And I just hope They're not trying to replace AI with writers and the human element. Mm. I just hope that's not happening.
Well, you know, I tell you, I'm glad you mentioned that because, Mike, we talked about this before, too, is that we know that it happens right now where they're using artificial intelligence right now to solve a lot of problems and even write. As a matter of fact, you can have artificial intelligence. If you're in your doctorate, you can try and get your doctorate degree, you can have your AI to write your thesis for you. I mean, come on, man. And which leads to, this is a slippery slope and a very dangerous path because it takes away critical thinking. When I say critical thinking, going to school, one thing that school does, and I think that it is underestimated or underappreciated, is the fact that when we were in school, we were given problems to solve, okay, or challenges in school, which caused us to think so we can figure out things for ourselves. Now, if we have artificial intelligence taking that critical thinking away from us, then to me, that is a dumbing down of society. Mike, I need your take.